Hello there, Ari Rosenbaum with another fun-filled episode of that 401k podcast. This week's topic, we're talking about, how 401k plan sponsors can avoid getting ripped off by their plan providers. A really important topic, and unfortunately, situations in the past that I've worked with and had to deal with dealing with plan sponsors as clients, with other plan providers that have gone rogue one way or the other. Usually, when we do a podcast, we talk about future events. And right now, this episode is being dropped on Friday, the 22nd, and that is the morning of the second day of that 401k National Virtual Conference. And as of yet, we have no scheduled dates for further events. We do have a date in June for Minnesota. Hopefully, that will happen. We have a new president, and hopefully that means I get a shot real soon. Two shots for those keeping score. And we will announce other events. There'll certainly be more virtual events as we get through the spring. But go to that 401kpsych.com always for further information, news, and whatnot. But let's get right to it. The problem with plan providers going rogue, when going rogue is, they do something bad or terrible to the plan sponsor in one fashion or another. Providers can go rogue, not by being just bad, but, just running afoul of what they were originally at. There are providers that do go bad. There are providers that are no longer as good as they used to be. But then there are certainly plan providers that do go into what I call, it's a pro wrestling term, they go into business for themselves. The problem here is that when a plan sponsor hires one of these providers, and the provider does go rogue or goes into business for themselves, it's going to be ultimately the plan sponsor who's going to hold the bag of responsibility. They're still going to be on the hook. And as plan fiduciaries, plan sponsors and trustees pay a high price for hiring bad providers, either those that steal or those that are incompetent. And a plan fiduciary has to exercise their duties prudently, and hiring a bad provider isn't really exercising diligently at all. Simply blaming the plan provider isn't going to cut it, because ultimately the plan sponsor is on the hook for responsibility, being a plan fiduciary. I've had clients who have had their assets stolen by Bernie Madoff, one in particular. Defined Benefit Plan put in all their money with Bernie Madoff. That was certainly a problem on a DB plan. They accepted responsibility. They fixed the issue, and thankfully we were able to get a positive agreement with the Department of Labor, because the plan was under investigation for twofold. One was for a plan participant complaining about their lack of coverage under the defined benefit plan, as well as the fact that the Madoff list of all their clients was circulating amongst the Department of Labor, and they were looking for any retirement plans that were on the list, and my client's name was up, as they say. One of the ways that a plan provider can really rip off a plan sponsor is with missing reports, disclosures, and paperwork. I had a client, unfortunately, I've always told the story. Had a client in the clothing manufacturing business. It was a defined benefit plan, actually. Two former employees who originally had made agreements that they would not be covered in the defined benefit plan, of course, had second thoughts and made a complaint to the Department of Labor. The problem, there were so many problems with this. This is, when you look at the Bernie Madoff situation with this client that I had, that was actually, that was a terrible situation, but it had a happy outcome. They got most of the money, if not all of it, back from the trustee of the Madoff, mess, the court-appointed trustee, In this situation, it wasn't a positive outcome, and one of the reasons it wasn't a positive outcome is because the plan sponsor kept on listening to bad advice, including, as I will tell later. But this business, this clothing manufacturer was out of business for several years, but yet their TPA, the actuary, still convinced the plan sponsor to operate it, even though the plan sponsor was out of business. Fortunately for the actuary, or unfortunately, the actuary died early in the investigation, and the Department of Labor investigating the plan believed incorrectly that the plan sponsor was stealing money from their plan for their own purposes, embezzling money. Why did they think that? They thought that because the actuary actually said it was okay for the owner of the company to write a check from the defined benefit plan of one company and write a check directly to another company that was part of a control group in an amount of, you know, a few hundred thousand or whatever it turned out to be. And the reason that he said that it was okay was because the owner of the company and the spouse and the child were pretty much the only, they had the bulk of the assets in the plan. The actuary, of course, gave terrible advice because, you know, right off the bat, that looks like certainly a prohibited transaction. At the very least, embezzlement's a whole nother story. So, you know, the Department of Labor thought it was embezzlement. It certainly wasn't. The only problem is that I could prove that it wasn't embezzlement. And the reason why is because the actuary never bothered to do valuation reports for this client. So for 25 years on the defined benefit plan, when you have an annual valuation, it's going to say, you know, this is my census. These are the benefits that are going to be promised to these participants at, you know, NRA, normal retirement age. And these valuation reports never existed because the actuary never did them. And that's why this company, this individual, because the company no longer existed, was sued by the Department of Labor for $3 million. I represented the client through the original Department of Labor investigation. I'm not a litigator. I have no interest in litigation. Everybody knows that. The owner of the company, former owner of the company, and the woman being sued, reached out to litigators that she knew. I advised that they should settle. The litigators, seeing a fee, did not. And I, of course, was pushed aside, as they say. And, of course, a few years back, I did look what happened with the plan. And, you know, you use the Google machine, as they say. And, of course, the owner, former owner of that company, made an agreement with the Department of Labor for the $3 million. So that was, you know, unfortunate outcome. I suggested they settled. I suggested she settle. Of course, she litigated it, paid the legal fees, and still had to fork over $3 million. But there are other plan providers out there that go rogue, that, you know, have completed valuation reports, have done the testing, have done the 5500s, but they forget to provide, you know, the required notices, disclosures. And those are usually a sign that a plan provider is going bad or going rogue. You know, plan sponsors, of course, are supposed to receive free disclosures from their plan providers. And if they don't, the problem is that relationship could be considered a prohibited transaction. And, of course, it's going to be the plan sponsor is going to pay the penalty. The problem, of course, with these plan providers that go bad or go rogue or just are incompetent now is that, you know, most plan sponsors are really unaware of when their plan provider goes bad. So, you know, this is the idea that, you know, this podcast episode is kind of a cheat sheet, as they say, as to what plan sponsors really need to know and if something's missing, that they maybe should be proactive. There, you know, certainly in this business, especially with 401k plans, there's always going to be a notice that, you know, that a plan provider may forget. But, you know, safe harbor notice, you know, it's not the worst thing in the world not to get. There's the ways of fixing it, I suppose, especially now that non-elected contributions no longer require notice. But there's certain essential documents. Some documents are more important than others, and I think annual valuation reports, I think quarterly reports, a Form 5500, fee disclosure notices, plan documents and amendments. Of course, you know, plan sponsors should keep all of that information and anything that's missing, follow up, because to me, these are the most essential documents. You know, there are obviously, you know, any required document is essential, but like I said, some documents are more essential than others. Important way to avoid getting ripped off is what I always say, a system of checks and balances between plan providers. One of my favorite courses of all time in high school and college was U.S. government. Always, I was a political science major, so that was an easy A in college. That was certainly an easy grade in high school. And, you know, of course, our system of government, maybe, you know, there's certainly a lot of people, a lot of politicians, and a lot of people on social media who really don't understand the system of checks and balances. But, you know, checks and balances is certainly a great system as long as it works. And, you know, the reason that Bernie Madoff, in the situation that I outlined before, the reason he was able to get away with his Ponzi scheme for so long was because not only was he an advisor on the investment fund that he had, his affiliated company was also the plan custodian. You know, if you had, you know, a Madoff fund, but you had an independent custodian, the independent custodian would certainly be more knowledgeable that there was a Ponzi scheme going out. So, you know, if you know, of course, when Bernie was the advisor and custodian on the very same investment, you know, it was very easy for Bernie to show assets that really weren't there. And so, you know, I think it's really important that when you look, by having independent providers or a system of checks and balances, it protects a plan sponsor better protection. With you know, embezzlement. You know, the problem is in this business or in life, thieves and embezzlers flourish when there's absolutely no oversight, and you know, there's no eye in the sky as to what the plan provider is doing. We see the situation with Vantage Benefits, which was a TPA in Dallas. The two principals have been sentenced to over a decade in prison. They were the TPA and the 316 administrator. It was that much easier to steal than if they had separate, you know, hats, if there was an independent 316, or if there was any other provider that could certainly, you know, do that. And, you know, the problem is, where I've seen, every time I've seen a problem with theft or embezzlement, it always happens when there is absolutely no oversight by another provider. You know, retirement plan sponsors really need to show, we really need to have the right team of plan providers. And, you know, people who have sophistication to do their jobs and the right level to make sure that they know whether the other providers are doing their job as well. Of course, seeking out an independent ERISA attorney, this is a point in the show where I should cough, or hiring an independent retirement plan consultant really goes a long way to making sure that nothing funny is going on, that there's independence, and that the providers are doing the job. You know, of course, there are TPAs out there that are producing TPAs that have their own affiliated registered investment advisory firm. I was very against that idea pre-fee disclosure. and less so these days. But I still think that you need to have an independent provider, whether it's an ERISA attorney or an independent retirement plan consultant, to review the work of that TPA that's wearing two hats as a TPA as well as a registered investment advisory firm. And a plan sponsor is only as good as their team, and having a team of independent TPA, financial advisor, and ERISA attorney is going to do a heck of a job making sure that none of the providers go rogue. Of course, this is going to be the next topic, next reason you should be concerned, and I'm sure this will upset some people, but I'm the turd in the punch bowl, as they say. The problem where plan providers can go bad is when there's a change of leadership or staff at the plan providers. I worked at two TPAs in the past that were purchased by larger companies. When there's a change of leadership or personnel in any type of business, change is going to happen. It's inevitable. So when I worked for one TPA, and I said to somebody, when a company's bought, there's always change. And of course, that employee ratted me out to the boss, and the boss says, "Why do you say these things?" I'm like, "That's reality. Any type of business that's purchased by another, there's always going to be some sort of change, one way or the other." And the problem is that sometimes, in these sales or mergers or whatever it may be, the people that you trusted and you really were impressed by, they may be leaving at the end of this deal, or they may have a 3-year earnout or whatever it is. But that's a cause for concern. Right now, I'm going through a situation with a client where the TPA changed hands a couple years ago, and there's problems with the termination fee and some other stuff, and that was a TPA that was bought out by another, and that's a problem. Another story was, I had a local TPA that was bought out by a company that was, this is years ago, was bought out by a company that was in the record keeping software business, who decided, "Let's we want to sell our record keeping software, let's buy TPAs." And of course, they ended up being the official TPA of the San Francisco 49ers at one point, when 49ers still played at Candlestick, which was nice. The problem was they bought the company and they ran out a lot of good employees. Several good actuaries and administrators. And the service suffered. Service suffered, and there was turnover. And so if your TPA is bought out, or your registered investment advisory firm is bought out, there's going to be change. And a lot of times the change isn't good. So I think it doesn't necessarily mean that the plan provider is going bad, but it's really a cause for concern and a requirement for extra supervision and review. Of course, one way to protect the plan sponsor from a plan provider is obviously having the right level of ERISA bond coverage and fiduciary liability insurance. You can control your own behavior, but you can't control someone else's. So I think it's important for a plan to have the correct level of ERISA bond coverage, especially when the plan's assets have grown in size. I mean, it's a requirement, but a lot of plan sponsors don't keep up to date on that. Make sure that you have the necessary fiduciary liability insurance, so there won't be any out-of-pocket expense if a plan participant sues the plan. Litigation expenses are quite enormous. If you've ever had to pay a litigation bill, unfortunately, I've had to in the past, in personal matters. That's an awful expense. And fiduciary liability insurance is obviously a great way to ensure the risk that a plan provider has gone rogue. So, of course, not only do you have to make sure the plan sponsor should make sure that they're properly insured, they also should make sure that the plan providers are properly insured. Of course, I've been in situations in the past where you have people embezzle and they weren't properly insured. We have the case of Matt Hutchinson, who's still serving in prison. I think he's still got probably another 5 or 6 years left to go. He was never insured. He stole money adopting employers of the MEPs where he stole the money from had to sue other providers. I think, you know, they got a default judgment against Matt, but, you know, you can't collect, especially when the government seized all the property that he bought with the money that he stole. So it's important that plan sponsors do identify their plan providers and whether they're properly insured. And last but not least, cyber theft. It's important for the plan sponsor to make sure that the plan providers have a cyber theft policy or a mechanism to make sure that benefits are not paid out to people that aren't entitled to them. We just had a couple lawsuits recently where one case the plan sponsor and the other case the TPA made unauthorized payments to people that were not the participants, and the participants sued. And usually what happens in those situations, I know with the new TPA case, it appears that the TPA just didn't use common sense, paid out people by check, paid out a crook by check when it was supposed to be done by ACH. And there were certain clues that the person they were paying the money out to was stealing the identity of the plan participant, who happened to be the owner of the plan sponsor client. So these are just, you know, some of the, you know, things to really keep up to date with to avoid, you know, the plan sponsor from avoiding a terrible situation with a plan provider that goes bad or goes criminal, as I say. So hope you enjoyed that episode. And of course, next week we'll have another episode of that 400K podcast. And hopefully by next week we'll have some announcements about some future events. So thanks for being a part, and I hope you join me next week. Thank you.